Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do, eh?
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
One of the major issues that food producers in the Global South face are agricultural subsidies of the Global North.
Today's guest is Noah Zerbe. Noah is Associate Professor in the Department of Government and Politics at Humboldt State University. His research and teaching interests consider the social, political, and economic context of technological development and innovation. Noah, what are some of the issues around people who work in agriculture and food production in other countries in terms of raising their own food to meet their own needs?
Well, I think the first thing we have to remember is it's a lot of hard work. Farmers in the Global South typically wake up before dawn. It's a very gendered division of labor, so men and women have very different tasks typically. It's a very, very hard life, up early, working through the day and into the evening hours, often just to make ends meet.
And so this is not their own personal garden and then selling things. You're talking about people working for a larger company.
It depends on the country. There's a whole lot of different models of agricultural production throughout the world. Often in Latin America, you'll find that kind of dynamic where you find a lot of employment on farms, rural waged employment. In Africa, more typically, you tend to find small-scale subsistence farmers representing sometimes 80% of the population. So farmers who have a little bit of land that they grow food for their own family and perhaps a little bit extra to sell on the market, but that represents a very small portion of their overall production.
Do you think that there's a trend towards more and more monoculture, more and more getting away from producing your own food, people finding themselves just planting a single crop for sale?
I think that's been a general trend really since the Green Revolution in the 1960s in South Asia, that you find farmers increasingly reliant on a single variety or a single crop and a single variety of a single crop, and then selling the surplus on the market in order to purchase the other things that they need. In the 1960s, that was really kind of envisioned as the way forward, that farmers could make a good living for themselves doing that, and they could have a better life by doing that rather than trying to grow their own food. It hasn't been entirely successful, and so we've seen some farmers relying on subsistence, but the general trend has been towards more and more monocultures, yes.
I know that there's a lot of concern about food security. I know in Japan it was a really big deal for them to get away from producing all of their own rice, and really it's a big trust in the whole world to take care of each other, to trust that other people are going to be able to continue to provide your food.
Yeah, I think that's been a major issue around the world, and Japan's still very, very hesitant about that. One of the major issues that food producers in the Global South face are agricultural subsidies of the Global North. It's been a major issue in international trade talks. The World Trade Organization has been unsuccessfully dealing with that. One of the reasons that you see agricultural subsidies are to ensure a sufficient level of domestic production. Now, that has the tendency, of course, of lowering prices, which affect farmers who want to sell on the market outside of those countries that offer extensive subsidies. So it's a major issue in the world today.
Well, it just seems like not only the idea of subsidies, but you have the idea of what is an acceptable wage also influencing what's produced in a country and then can be sold on a market and be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, the vast majority of farmers do live under the UN's official poverty level of $2 a day. Many are the poorest of the poor.
There's been a lot of talk about seeds and some of the inputs into crops. What are some of the ways that seeds and food is controlled?
Well, the major way that we see that taking place today is in the consolidation of the seed industry. Since the 1980s, we've seen a lot of seed companies purchasing other seed companies or purchasing chemical companies. A real consolidation of the market in that area. Today, you've got a handful of seed companies, about four or five, that for some crop varieties like corn control up to 80% of commercial seed production globally. And so when you've got that concentration on the input side, that really represents an area where we see increasing control of prices. We often see higher prices for seed and other farming inputs. And this represents a real squeeze for farmers around the world. Now, it affects different farmers differently, of course. Farmers who produce their own seed or save their own seed are less affected by this than farmers who rely on commercial seed varieties. So the types of farming that goes on affects the impact that consolidation in the seed market has.
I know there are a lot of countries who have said, you know, we won't accept GMO seeds. Tell me about the Terminator seeds and how that's having an impact on farmers.
Sure. The Terminator seed was developed actually by the U.S. government, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and then licensed off to a commercial seed producer that was then acquired by Monsanto. And it's become a major focal point for folks who are concerned about genetically modified seeds. What the Terminator seed does is to create a seed that won't germinate. So you purchase the first generation of seed from the commercial seed producer. You plant it, it germinates and grows into a normal plant. But if you take that second generation of seed and try replanting it, it won't grow. This is really a way that seed companies have tried to ensure to protect their intellectual property in the form of the seed, right? One of the major obstacles to commercialization of seed production historically was the fact that farmers could purchase the seed once and then replant it over time. And so this is really a technical way of trying to prevent farmers from doing that. It's a way of trying to move beyond just intellectual property protection in the form of patents, which have been around for a long time. From the farmer's perspective, it creates an interesting tension because on the one hand, they're interested in having seed varieties that may perform more favorably than traditional varieties that they may have developed or grown themselves. On the other hand, it means that they're turning over control of future generations of seed to the seed company. And so this question of intellectual property rights, of ownership of seed varieties, is really an interesting one because seed, unlike virtually any other kind of property, reproduce, right? They spread. And so that makes controlling the seed and it makes the question of ownership much more complicated.
I've also read that some of the seeds that are developed are made to be compatible with some of the products that are produced by the same company.
Right. What you're looking at there are seeds like Monsanto's Roundup Ready, or Pioneer produces a similar product known as Liberty Link. Those are seed varieties that are genetically engineered to resist the application of what are referred to as wide-spectrum herbicides, herbicides like Roundup. Those kinds of herbicides will generally kill any plants that they're sprayed upon. So what you have with these herbicide-tolerant crops are crops that can withstand the direct application of that chemical. The chemical would then kill everything else in the field, but not the crop that's been genetically modified to resist that. They're promoted by the seed companies as a way of reducing the amount of labor that's involved in the production process. They're often promoted as an environmentally friendly form of farming. The argument is that it reduces the total amount of herbicide that's sprayed on a crop in a given year. Critics say that, in fact, you just find a more widespread application of those wide-spectrum herbicides, which tend to remain in the field and so on.
What can people in this country do to help farmers who are raising products in other countries?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we can do. One is, at the individual level, to look for the fair trade products. Fair trade products are products that are produced usually by cooperatives in the developing world, and they ensure that the farmer receives a floor price for the commodity. So if the price of coffee, for example, falls below a particular level, the farmer is assured that no matter how low the global prices go, they'll always be assured of a minimum price for their goods. This is important for farmers because it introduces stability, right? I mean, one of the really difficult things about farming is that you never know what the price of the commodity you're going to be producing will be until after you've already invested 6 months or a year of work into producing it. And so fair trade products ensure a higher price, they ensure a premium, so that communities can use that extra money in order to finance initiatives that are beneficial for the community, digging wells, building schools, those kinds of things. So fair trade products are a good way of ensuring that your money goes to things that are beneficial for farmers in the global south. That's at the individual level. At the kind of broader political level, one of the major issues has been American agricultural subsidies. Europe and Japan have similar agricultural subsidies. These have been an issue in world trade talks since 2001, and they've been a major stumbling block because the U.S. and Europe don't want to get rid of them. The problem with these agricultural subsidies is that they tend to depress the prices for commodities that farmers in the global south may be growing. Things like cotton, in particular, have been one of the major focal points. And so the global price of cotton is depressed because of American agricultural subsidies. And so for farmers growing cotton in the global south, this means that they receive less for their product than they would otherwise receive. So efforts to change the farm bill to address those kinds of issues would also be a powerful way of changing the global food system.
And it seems like the farm bill doesn't address a lot of the crops that we'd like to see with some stability in our own market.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The farm bill really concentrates the vast majority of subsidies to just a handful of crops, things like cotton, wheat, and so on. It doesn't really provide subsidies or incentives for the kinds of things that would lead to healthier lifestyles, for vegetable production, for example. And so we tend to get very, very cheap corn that we have to find ways to get rid of, things like high fructose corn syrup or ethanol, rather than accessible, inexpensive, healthy vegetables.
This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking to Noah Zerbe. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every god I do.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU and KHSR for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.